Political infighting and last year's ousting of Malcolm Turnbull has seen Australia's diplomatic standing in the Asia-Pacific region drop. That's the finding of a new Asia Power Index released by the Lowy Institute today. The index maps the power of 25 countries in Asia across 114 different indicators, including military, economic, cultural, diplomatic, and political. While the United States remains the region's most powerful nation, Australia's overall ranking is seventh, just behind South Korea and Russia. Hervé Lemahieu is the director of the Lowy Institute's Asian Power and Diplomacy Program. He joins me from Singapore. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks for having me.
I guess it's no great surprise that the US remains the dominant power in the region, although I think it is worth spending some time talking about China and the US vying for that top spot. But it is a pretty mixed picture for Australia. How are we faring in terms of this power index?
Well, I think Australia is a standout middle power, and we've had a few mixed results in the last year. On the one hand, I think our economic relationships have really been enhanced as a result of having taken the initiative in resuscitating the Trans-Pacific Partnership minus the United States last year. So that is an arrangement that came into force with 11 other countries in our region. But on the other hand, as you mentioned earlier, our diplomatic influence has gone down slightly, not too much, but as a result, really, of the fact that Canberra has been rather inward-looking in the last year as a result of the leadership spills. I think leaders in the region were treating Prime Minister Scott Morrison until recently as the interim Prime Minister, and now he's the full-time Prime Minister. He's been given a new mandate to form lasting relationships with his counterparts in the region, but he will have to prove his durability in order to enhance his ability to project Australia's interests on the world stage. I mean, on the bigger level, I think one of the big findings of the index is that we're entering into a new and I think quite turbulent age of great power relations, certainly between the United States and China. And I think that means that we're moving from an open and consensual world order that sort of predominated after the Cold War to one now more defined by competition and zero-sum politics. And that, I think, has three big consequences for our region. The first is that I think under most scenarios, short of war, I do not think the US will be able to halt the narrowing power differential between itself and China. In fact, the Trump administration may actually be accelerating that kind of leveling between the US and China. The second big consequence, which we're mapping, is that I think globalization will continue to involve the US and China, but not necessarily the two together. And that means a more hazardous variant of globalization dominated by spheres of economic influence. And then the third consequence for countries like Australia and other middle powers is that I think that we actually become more crucial to the overall balance of power, given that these two superpowers are now gridlocked and that we are facing the fading US strategic predominance in our region and a sharpening ambition of China.
So given, as you describe it, the Trump administration and its approach to diplomacy in the region may be speeding up the sort of rise of China in this particular part of the world. Does Australia's diplomatic influence diminish as a result of our closeness to the United States in that context?
No, I think actually if you look at where we perform strongest, we are ranked second for our defense network. So that's one of the eight thematic measures of power that we look at. That's as a result of the depth of our historical ties with the United States, the fact that that remains an incredibly well-developed alliance. And in a sense, it's a force multiplier of Australia's military capability, the fact that we have the United States behind us. But at the same time, it means that we have to invest more in non-allied defense partnerships, thinking outside of the box, perhaps a bit more smartly, about reaching out to players like Singapore, like Indonesia, like Malaysia, also Japan and India. Because I think, whereas we were speaking of a sort of US-dominated alliance network that held for the last 50 years, the hub in that hub and spoke system is now increasingly ebbing, and therefore the spoke-to-spoke relations, the relationships and defense partnerships between the smaller players have to be strengthened.
And how quickly is the gap between China and the United States narrowing in the Asia-Pacific region?
Well, what we're seeing is that the United States still leads. It's the only country that tops 80 points in our 100 point scale of power. But that gap has narrowed between itself and China. So China is now on 75 points. It's about 8 points behind China, behind the United States, whereas last year it was 10 points. And what that means in sort of concrete terms is that China's economy is still growing, despite the fact that there's a slowing GDP growth rate. Last year, China's economy grew by more than the absolute size of Australia's economy. So the scale of this is actually staggering. And on top of that, I think China still really has that comparative advantage in terms of its economic soft power. That's not to say that China doesn't face its own series of challenges. I think there are external challenges. We've seen increased degrees of opposition to President Xi Jinping's flagship Belt and Road Initiative. We've had countries like Malaysia and Myanmar renegotiated their flagship Belt and Road Initiative projects in favor of the borrower. So it hasn't worked all in Beijing's favor. And on top of that, I think we're also seeing internal challenges for China. Namely, the biggest one, the biggest structural challenge, is the aging of China's society. So we're dealing with a rapidly aging working age population in China. By 2045, China's working age population, that's everyone from the age of 15 to 64, will be about 158 million people smaller than it is today. And that presages all sorts of social and political challenges to come for China. So we do think that China is leveling with the United States, but it will be difficult for China to become the undisputed power, the leading power in Asia. I think far more likely we're dealing with an uncertain leveling between the US and China, where the middle powers will have to play a far smarter game in terms of managing the relationships with both.
When Donald Trump first agreed to meet with North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, it was said that the US president was handing North Korea a huge geopolitical gift, a strategic advantage, essentially for free. Are we now seeing that the tangible manifestation of that in this power ranking with North Korea jumping pretty significantly up the rankings?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to make that distinction between the theatrics of North Korea's power and the fundamentals of its power. But increasingly, the two are kind of blurring into each other. That is to say that Kim Jong-un has played a weak hand very well. And he has now actually registered, or his country has registered, the second largest gains in improvements in overall score behind China in our index. In fact, Kim Jong-un jumped 5 places in diplomatic influence this year, albeit starting from a low base. But I think the fact that we've had summit diplomacy ostensibly on an equal playing field with the United States, the most powerful country in the world, that Kim Jong-un has been transformed from a sort of pariah dictator into international statesman walking on the red carpets in Vietnam and in Singapore, I think has really enhanced and partly normalized North Korea's diplomatic ties with the region in Southeast Asia. Now, what Kim Jong-un really wants is a lifting or a relaxation in the international sanctions regime, which hasn't happened. But we can start talking about a relaxation in the enforcement of those sanctions. And that has also produced a better outlook for North Korea's future prospects in our index. So, yes, I think North Korea has played a weak hand very well in the last year. And keeping in mind that we're no further along in terms of denuclearization. To the contrary, North Korea has actually jumped up 1 place in military capability, and in the last 12 months has produced enough fissile materials to create 12 new nuclear weapons. That's an estimate, but the point is it continues unabated.
Does this tell us something about the power of optics around an individual leader? Because it's not just North Korea that sort of jumped up the rankings. New Zealand too, clearly led by Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, has risen up the ranks. Is that a new sort of metric, I suppose, that we're dealing with?
Well, what we're doing for the first time is actually looking at trends over time. So we've performed the first baseline assessment last year, and now we can actually look at the contributions that leaders are making towards their country's overall power. And what we are seeing is that power is more than just what you have. It's more than just GDP or defense spending. It's also what you do with what you have, and that's really largely based around leadership and foreign policy. And so it makes sense, therefore, that leaders do have an impact in the way that we assess the success of countries in terms of their diplomatic clout. And as you pointed out, New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, was ranked fourth in terms of her ability as a leader to project New Zealand's diplomatic interests on the world stage. That contrasts with our somewhat poor form for diplomatic influence this year. But not New Zealand's not the only country. We're also looking at, for example, in Malaysia, the return of the 93-year-old Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad has also changed Malaysia's fortunes. Mahathir has really re-emphasized the need for greater geo-economic security, greater bargaining power in a turbulent age of Xi and Trump politics. And he's done that while maintaining his close ties with Beijing. So we are seeing sort of deft diplomatic policies coming out of leaders, and that is having an influence on the rankings.
Hervé Lemahieu, thank you very much.
Thank you, Hamish.
Hervé Lemahieu is the director of the Lowy Institute Asian Power and Diplomacy Program. The index is worth taking a look at on their website. Pretty fascinating detail there, and all sort of graphicized quite neatly and clearly as well.